Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
When I say, can you dig it? Put your two hands up like that.
Hey, 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 everybody. We are back with another episode of Can You Dig It, a podcast by SilverScreenAndRoll.com. I'm Christian Rivas, joined by Jacob Brood. Lakers are back in a big way. Not actually. It was a nice little win over the Spurs, who I believe are now a few games under 500, which is not saying much considering where the Lakers are in their season. They're 8-6 on the season now after the win over the Spurs. But for those that have a deep-rooted resentment against the Spurs because of the rivalry in the early 2000s, and also just the role, I guess, Greg Popovich has had in the Lakers' moves they have and have not made, just the weirdest.
He's petty. Like,
yeah, it was a thing for sure. I don't know.
Where do the Spurs rank in terms of like Lakers rivals? I think they're two
after the Celtics. Yeah, I buy into that. There's no team I sort like when I think of pre Lakers Celtics part three or four, whatever you want to call it. Those big three Celtics teams, those are the teams I think I hated the most, were those Spurs teams. So that checks out. And so if you have all those feelings towards the Spurs, Sunday was a good day for you. I was gonna say night, but it was an early game. I was watching some World Cup qualifiers at like 11:45, and I was like, I got this part blocked out of my day. I'll enjoy my afternoon and then end it with watching the game and podcasting. And then I get a Google alert from my phone saying, hey, in half an hour, the Lakers play. I'm like, what the hell? So Sunday morning, noon, whatever you want to call it. Good day to be a Lakers fan. Friday night, less so.
was a terrible time to be a Lakers fan. I just terrific luck that I have. I covered the game on Friday and then did not watch the game today. So I had an early Thanksgiving with part of my family on Sunday. And shockingly, none of them care about Lakers basketball because they're normal Indiana people who are not Lakers fans. So was outvoted on the TV. There was football on the TV all day, so I didn't watch any of the Lakers game. I saw a couple notes. I knew THT was returning. I'd seen that in the injury report on Saturday. Outside of that, give me the TLDR of what happened in that game.
Anthony Davis played out of his mind, and I tweeted during the game, it's so silly. I don't know how many points AD would like realistically have to score for it to click for him. Like, I can do this any night I wanted to. And it's not even so much him playing center, I don't think. I really just think it's him staying near the rim and attacking the basket at will. Granted, the player he was going up against tonight was Eubanks, not Lakers legend. What's his name?
Devin
Eubanks.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Devin Eubanks was his
name. Eubanks.
Yeah, close enough.
Not to be confused with him, is Eubanks. And good Lord, he just absolutely cooked him to the point where Eubanks, it was against THT, and THT did irritate him quite a bit. Like, he did the whole talk to the hand thing you did as a child and put his hand directly in his face. That was a nice little welcome back for THT. But the other, we'll talk more about the Lakers. The Lakers played pretty small, started Carmelo Anthony and Anthony Davis at the 4 and 5. Nice little lineup change for Lakers fans that have been clamoring for those 80 at center minutes. But their bench unit was even smaller in the front court, and Thaddeus Young had himself a little feast. That was really funny to watch, but nowhere near the level that Anthony Davis was at. He finished with something like, 35 points?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. 34 points, 15 rebounds, 6 assists, was 14 of 24 from the field.
Really, just really good. And most of those points came in the first half. Just silly, silly game from him. Really kind of going back to that Anthony Davis that in the 2019-20 season, people were having those conversations about how wide is the gap really between Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think those conversations were probably a little premature, and God, what Giannis did in the finals last year was just silly, and Giannis as a player is just silly. But AD, when he's playing like this and attacking the rim and not settling for jumpers, not to say, again, he can take those jumpers. He made 2 of 3 from behind the arc and had some nice little turnaround jumpers that looked tasty, again, against Devin Eubanks, who's to say it'll work every night. But I had a lot of fun watching him. And when he's playing like that, he is, I think, in the conversation for like a top 5-10 player. And who's to say that this will be the norm going forward with Anthony Davis playing at center, or that he'll even have these types of games against teams who don't play Devin Eubanks at center. But for the night or the day, it was lots of fun.
It's definitely a mentality thing. I don't necessarily mean it in like a bad way. I kind of view it similar to LeBron. Like, LeBron very clearly plays a certain way in the regular season versus the postseason just because of the wear and tear. And I kind of have started applying that to Anthony Davis. He can get to the rim, and there's nights, just like with LeBron, there's nights where he'll do this. Well, I guess days when he'll do this and remind you that he can still do it. And but I mean, it is a bit of a beating you take, and the Lakers have been very clear their focus is on the playoffs, the postseason, a title. So AD isn't going to take that beating for 82 games, however many games he's going to play. He physically can't take that beating for 82 games. So I haven't really been too bothered overall by AD's play style this year. I know a lot of people have been upset at the amount of jumpers he's taken. Yeah. And just in general, I know a lot of people get upset just because they feel he's settling. Maybe it's a matter of me putting too much stock into that one playoff run, but I think when push comes to shove, the Lakers, LeBron and AD play a different style of basketball and a more effective style. Even still, like, AD's percentage of mid-range shots is 44%. Last year it was 53%. I think everybody can agree last year was an anomaly. But it was 41% when they won the title. He's getting to the rim more than he was that season. So, and he's shooting less threes. So overall, he's playing kind of how you would want him to play. I think this is how it's going to be for the regular season. And then we'll see come postseason. But it's encouraging to see him still have these nights. Maybe not encouraging. It's fun to see him still have these nights where he's just like, yeah, I can do whatever I want and you guys can't stop me.
Right. The other bright spot from the game was the other kid from Chicago, Talen Horton Tucker. First game back since, I believe, September. It's been a minute.
October 6th, I believe, was when he last played. I wrote it, but I can't remember when it was.
17 points, plus 14 in the box score, which is a team high. I like Talen Horton Tucker.
Hot take?
Yes. Was I in the camp of if you have to choose between Talen Horton Tucker and Alex Caruso, you bring back Talen Horton Tucker? Tough to say.
They didn't have to choose. I'm not even going to entertain that either or.
Absolutely. You are correct. And for those listening that are just figuring that out, welcome to my podcast. I'm not just a guy you yell at on Twitter. I also write and have a podcast with my good friend Jacob. But it was a great game for him. I say that because even as somebody who doesn't think Talen Horton Tucker is like the next James Harden, or I've seen some wild comparisons for THD.
Steph Curry?
Yeah. Buddy, the things I've seen in my mentions are nuts. But the point is, even if I am lower on THT than some guy, as some people on Lakers Twitter, I understand the value he has to this team specifically when it comes to those three guard lineups. Lakers went Russell Westbrook, Avery Bradley, and then Talen Horton Tucker at the three. I think Talen at this stage of his career is this weird, like, undersized point forward slash slasher. Like, yeah. It is a weird archetype to have as a player. But if you're a team that is as small as the Lakers, and if you're going to make, you know, 80 at the five work with the forward depth they have, he's the guy you want playing the three. Like, he is the perfect player. I think the player comp I personally like for him is like a Tyreke Evans, maybe a little more tenacious on defense, but I think offensively he'll probably get to a point that Tyreke Evans was at, and obviously he has that length. I don't know if that's his ceiling. I don't know if that's just me like underselling how much talent he has. But my point is, even if I'm not super high on him, or you know, somebody listening to this isn't super high on him, I think he showed exactly why he's going to have a spot in the rotation, even when everybody's healthy, because there aren't many players like him in the league. And there are certainly not many players like him on the Lakers roster. Like, I was thinking about this today, watching him play defense. The fact that he has the wingspan he does, even if like the fundamentals aren't all the way there yet, his length covers so much ground that upon coming back, he was one of the three best defenders on the team.
Oh yeah, easily. He's probably their, I'm trying to think before I say this, is he their best perimeter defender right now?
I think
Avery Bradley maybe.
I was going to say, it depends on your opinion of Avery Bradley. I think there are things Avery Bradley does better than Talen Horton Tucker, but generally speaking, if I had to choose one of them to be in a closing lineup, it would probably be THT, unless Avery Bradley's shooting the lights out like he did last week. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about guys that have a reputation on that end in a positive way, not a negative way, because there are a few guys in the Lakers that have a defensive reputation on the negative side. But I think it's him, AD, Trevor Ariza, and Dwight Howard, and LeBron James. I'll throw him in there because I think he deserves to be in there.
Yeah. THD has a 7'1 wingspan, and he's 6'4.
Nuts.
His body doesn't make it. His player comp is NBA 2K my player. Like, your first year, you make a player where you want, like, a athletic point guard so you can just run around people and dunk it. And then you're like, oh, I'll figure out the threes later. That's literally THT's game right now.
He's built like Mike Wazowski.
Yes, exactly. He's important to this team for all the reasons you just said. They don't have wing depth, even when healthy. They don't have wing depth. And they're certainly not healthy right now. I always kind of envision – there were a couple things I thought – coming into the season that kind of had to be the case based on the Lakers roster construction. One of them was that AD had to play a lot of minutes at center, which I think we've all realized is the case and has to be the case. And one of them was that THT was going to get big minutes, probably at small forward. Defensively, it's going to be interesting to see how he holds up. I don't imagine he's going to start once everybody's healthy, although we'll see. If he keeps playing like he did on Sunday, he has an interesting case, and maybe more alarmingly, I think we'll talk about later, if Kent Bazemore keeps up playing like he is, then he has a case. But he's going to be important. He's going to get minutes. I mean, the Lakers paid him like a guy that's going to be important to this team this offseason. So you don't give him the contract that they did and then not expect big things from him. Everybody during the preseason, during the offseason, was talking about expecting him to step up. And for him to go from – he went over a month without playing a game, steps directly into the starting lineup, which tells you how many injuries the Lakers have, and dropped 17 points on 7 of 14 shooting. I mean, he's good. He's really good. The wildest thing, I honestly, every time I write about THT, I have to look this up because I never believe it. He's 20. He's in his third year in the league, and he's 20.
This is how Celtics fans felt with Jason Tatum. I get it now.
Yeah. 19-year-old Taylor Horton Tucker. It's wild how young he is still, and – he's good. Yeah, he's going to have a really important role in this team. He's going to play a lot of minutes. You can call him three guard lineups, whatever you want to call him. Like you said, he's like this hybrid positionless player where he's like this, like you said, an undersized three or an oversized point guard type of, I'm not even sure what you would call him. He's in the perfect era to play basketball because he's able to kind of float around different positions. He can be a secondary ball handler, which might be as important as anything with this team, because this team was just out of ball handlers on, what was the game, the Heat game, when Rondo didn't play and they didn't have THT, they didn't have LeBron. It was literally just Russ as your point guard. This team was entirely out of point guards or ball handlers less than a week ago, so that's a really important skill set he's going to bring. It'll be interesting if his return paired with LeBron's inevitable or imminent return lessens the minutes Rondo plays. He's very hit and miss, but getting ball handlers back, getting wing depth back, which is both what THT and LeBron are, is going to do absolute wonders for this Lakers team, because they were just stuck in this weird predicament where it was like, we have a bunch of centers, Melo, and a bunch of guards, and there really wasn't anything they could do about it. So they badly needed THT back. They badly need LeBron back. They badly need Ariza back, but I would imagine it's still multiple weeks before that happens. So the light at the end of the tunnel is getting brighter. We're getting there. We're almost through this horrible injury spell. And I'm excited to see THT back now.
Listen, if Melo keeps shooting like this, all you're going to need is LeBron, Melo, and AG. I'll permit it. Just play 3-on-5 with those guys.
Just let Melo spot up on the offensive end, and it's 3 points every time. Although it was not 3 points against the Timberwolves. He regressed to the mean hard against Minnesota. He was like one of 13 from three, I think, or something that night.
He is when they're at Staples Center, I just assume every shot he throws up is going to go in. It is like the opposite of the Lakers shooter curse with Melo. Even if THT, going back to him, even if THT spends the majority of his minutes at the three, which I think is a foregone conclusion with how many guards the Lakers have on the roster, there are still so many guys, so many guards that need minutes. And Wayne Ellington was somebody who, when I wrote my 10 questions after 10 games of the season on Silver Screen and Roll, if you read it, hello, mom and dad.
I was going to say hell of a shameless plug, but
he was somebody in that story I wrote off as somebody who will probably be a regular DNP CD guy when the guard rotation's fully healthy. Probably not. He's shooting the ball really well right now.
He has to shoot really well to stay in the lineup because right. He's a liability defensively. The Timberwolves were outright attacking him at times during that third quarter, or end of the fourth quarter. He's largely been what I thought he would be. The problem is, like we've said, there's just so many injuries that they need him. They need his shooting. They need a guy that teams – like there's – this isn't the first time this point's been made, but there's a difference between like Rondo, even when he's shooting 40% from three in the playoffs, and a guy like Wayne Ellington, even if he's shooting 20% from three. There's a respect and a gravity that Wayne Ellington's going to have that Rondo is never going to have. And so just having a guy like that, that defenses have to be aware of, have to put eyes on, it helps the offense. And he talked after that game Friday that he's kind of still learning the team, but the team's also still learning that, hey, if I knock down a couple shots early, the offense opens up because guys start paying attention to me on that end of the court. And then there's driving lanes, there's space to get to the rim and things like that. So he still has value, but he has to go 5 of 7 from three, like he did on Sunday to I think stay in the rotation on a given night, because it's been about as rough as I expected it to be on the other end.
Yeah, and it's exactly what you said. Him living up to his reputation as a three-point shooter is going to be the reason he stays in the rotation, because even going into the season before this hot stretch, I could say pretty confidently that he was going to be one of the three best shooters on the team. Like, it was going to be him. And again, this is going into the season. My guesses would have been him, Melo, and then like Kent Bazemore, maybe
Malik, probably.
Boy, that could not, the latter could not be further from the truth through a few games. We'll get to that. But the point in me saying that is there are guys, Malik Monk being one of them as well, who in the absence of Kendrick Nunn and Wayne Ellington for that time, now Austin Reeves, are stepping up and showing the value they can have to this team when they're fully healthy. Like, these are guys that can all play spot minutes, which in some cases, I guess, is a good thing, that when another guy doesn't have it, there's a guard on your bench you can turn to that you can say, hey, go in there and make shots. That's not something the Lakers had last year. And I think it was a big reason for their just mega shift into we're a guard heavy team now. We need guys like that. Our colleague at Silver Spoon and Roll, Alex Regla, pointed out that, you know, having guys like Malik Monk and Kendrick Nunn when healthy are going, it's going to be so dangerous for the Lakers because of how they get their shots and how skilled they are at pulling up from just about anywhere on the floor. And that's really exciting when you think about, and especially when you compare it to last season. But those minutes, there's just not enough for everybody. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about what the rotation might look like from a guard perspective, but also from the team as a whole. So that'll be us when we get back. Why are there so many guards on this team? That is the one thing I'd like to know. A few of them probably aren't playable. Like, I don't imagine. Rondo. Yeah. I don't imagine Rondo is going to play much. Lord willing, the team gets healthy. Avery Bradley, God, I don't know. I don't know where Avery Bradley fits into this. I think when the Lakers signed him, my logic was, you know, he'll be a nice buffer for the guards that aren't healthy and also serve as a bridge on the bench for the guys that are new to the system, helping them get acclimated, all that good stuff. All the stuff you sign like a Rondo or a Jared Dudley for. And then he has these nights where he's solid on the defensive end and also drains like a million three-pointers. So I have, and also a starter. Like he's been Frank's go-to guy in the absence of these guards. So it's just nuts. I have no idea. You could ask me a month from now if I think he'll be on the roster. I still don't think I'll have an answer for you.
I don't know what to make of Bradley. I think when they claimed him, it was in the midst of them realizing we have a ton of injuries and we don't have guards. And it made sense in a vacuum. Kind of annoyed me that they went this whole preseason talking about we're saving that spot. And then it was Avery Bradley who they claimed. Boy, it is really hot or really cold with Avery Bradley. I still ultimately lean toward he's not a rotation guy. He is way too spotty with his offense. He can contribute defensively. Typically gives you pretty consistent effort on that end of the floor. But his offense is just typically such a negative that he really has to be hitting shots. He's basically the opposite Wayne Ellington. Like if you combine those two into one player, we'd have an incredible
starting player. Shooting guard.
Yeah, we would have the exact starting shooting guard we needed. So I ultimately lean toward him not being in the rotation. I would still, I don't know about on the roster. I think Frank really likes him, which evidenced by the fact that he threw him into the starting lineup pretty quickly. I think some of that was familiarity with the system, with AD and LeBron and Dwight. There were some things they were able to run right away to get some easy baskets, some sets, that I was like, okay, well, it makes sense. But when you're not able to do those things, when teams start scouting it and whatnot, I don't know. I'm just not really big on Avery Bradley overall. I think a guy like when he's healthy, Austin Reeves provides just more on both ends. Maybe not both ends. He's much, much better offensively and is good enough defensively that he should be getting the minutes that Avery Bradley gets. I said, I don't know if I said it on the podcast. It was one of the last games Austin Reeves played before he got hurt. He should just be getting 30 minutes a night at this point until he starts doing things to where he warrants his minutes getting taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just does so many things well. He never looks sped up. Like, he always seems composed. He can, it's all things we said. He's a perfect glue guy to put into those lineups because he can do whatever you need. If you need a ball handler, he has a little bit of creation ability. He can shoot. He can defend. He can hustle. He's a perfect glue guy. So a guy like that, I'd be giving most of Bradley's minutes to. THT, we just talked about last segment. If Malik is going to shoot well, which he's also been pretty hot and cold, I'd give a bunch of minutes to him. And then then there's the Kent Bazemore conundrum, because on paper, he is, I wouldn't say exactly what this team needs, but a really important piece. It just hasn't clicked with him at all this year, it doesn't feel like.
Which is disappointing, because in my time covering him on the Kings, he was somebody that I thought if this guy ever is available for the veterans minimum, he'd be perfect for the Lakers. And that feeling only grew watching him last season with the Trailblazers. And so for him to be performing the way he is a big disappointment. And what's even stranger to me is, before the season started, had you told me this, I would have said, well, you know, even if the offense isn't there, he's still so valuable defensively, especially on a team without any wing depth, that the minutes will be there regardless. I no longer feel that way. I actually think if you ask me to make a playoff rotation next week, he is one of the guys I feel pretty comfortable saying is out of the rotation just based on how they performed. I am optimistic that he'll find his way back into the rotation. It's not looking promising right now. The other guy I'd say confident, or the other two guys I will say confidently aren't in my rotation, playoff start next week, are Rajon Rondo and DeAndre Jordan. And the latter is interesting to me because Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan are healthy right now. DeAndre Jordan hasn't played in the last two games. Either Frank is a man of his word and is playing 80 at the five based on matchups, or DeAndre Jordan is just out of the rotation, which the latter I would prefer.
it's that one, I'm pretty sure. The Lakers are almost a full 8 points better. We'll round it up. Better offensively with DeAndre off the floor than on it. They're basically the same defensively, regardless. And if he's not able to help the defense and he's holding you back that much offensively, like, it's pretty cut and dry. We talked last week, and I wrote about it, that it was just a numbers game, that I thought DeAndre had to stay on the floor. And basically he was, it feels harsh to say this, but he was so bad that the Lakers just risked it and tried the number game with him just sitting on the bench. It's really interesting. Again, I didn't watch it. You talked about how small the lineups were. Dwight only played 10 minutes on Sunday. AD played 40. They're going super small. I will be interested when they come back. If they're going this small, if Frank just tries out LeBron at the five, he did it a bit. He did it the one game, or the final game of the postseason, and that was just throw everything against the wall and hope something sticks. It just seems like if there was a guy I would say would be cut to sign someone midseason right now, it would be DeAndre, because this just has not worked. Probably not shocking. There was a whole mountain of evidence in Brooklyn that that he was not the guy that he was when he used to play in LA. But I just didn't think, well, one, I didn't think he was this bad. I thought he could just be a good enough kind of replication of JaVale for 15 minutes a night. He can't at all. And two, I just didn't think that they would fully commit to AD at center, even though I thought they needed to. And to Frank's credit, he's done it when he could, when he's had guys available, or if the lineup, if the opposing lineup has called for it, he's done it. I know the Lakers fans want him to do it more. The numbers game still hasn't changed, and the Lakers still don't have enough forwards, but they're just kind of saying, screw it, we're going to try it anyway. They did it against Minnesota. They did it against the Spurs. It'll be interesting to see what they do against the Bulls tonight, because I know Vucevic is out. I just think at this point, DeAndre is out of the rotation. It's hard for me to see him getting back into it. Frank claims that there'll be certain matchups that will require them to go big. If LeBron's healthy, I don't know what those are. Like Steven Adams in Memphis, but they already played him. There are very, very few matchups where I'm like, yeah, it makes sense to go big here. And even fewer, if any, that DeAndre is the one you're going big for. At this point, if you need to go big, just start Dwight and then stagger Dwight and AD, because I just don't think you can play DeAndre.
You know what's interesting is I kind of feel for DeAndre, because I do think if you had a point guard that wasn't Russell Westbrook, like a point guard that played more on the perimeter, DeAndre Jordan would probably be fine. He really is just a victim of this roster construction. That's not he's not great by any means. But I think on, say, like the Warriors, if the Warriors needed a veterans minimum center to soak up those minutes, I think he is a guy that would be much better for them than he is for the Lakers right now. But generally speaking, I agree. I don't think there will be many games where, you know, people are banging on the table or tweeting me saying, hey, you need to tell Frank in your next media availability, in which reporters just express their grievances to Frank Vogel, which is what we all do, to play DeAndre Jordan. I don't think I'm going to get any of those questions all season. So Rondo, DJ, and let's just say Kent Bazemore right now are the guards or the players you have out of the rotation. Even with those guys, Rondo and Bazemore specifically, you have to find minutes at the guard positions for Russell Westbrook, who's starting. He's a lock in the rotation. The other guys, I would say, are locks in the rotation right now as far as guards are Talen Horton-Tucker, Malik Monk, and Austin Reeves. I think if somebody much smarter than me came on the podcast — that's not saying you're not much smarter than me, I just don't feel like arguing with you.
What the hell?
I don't want to argue with you. I'm assuming you're on my side here. There are probably cases to be made against Austin Reeves being one of the guys that are locked into the rotation. Maybe. But as somebody who has watched the Lakers every game this season, I just don't get how you can keep him out of the rotation. Honestly, his shots haven't fallen as of late, but at the start of the season, he was pretty reliable from three-point range. So I just think he belongs in the rotation. And if you are of the same mindset, that is four guards already, not including Wayne Ellington and Avery Bradley, that you have in the rotation. Now, Talen Horton-Tucker's a three. That opens up a guard spot. Who's that going to? Avery Bradley, Wayne Ellington, and I'll throw Kent Bazemore in there.
I think it'll be Bazemore. I'm not as low overall on him right now. He's looked like a guy that's just needed a game or two off. I didn't think the Lakers could afford to do that. THT's return, I guess, made it so. But I there's still value there, especially defensively. I would say, like, right now, your main guards, when healthy, are Russ, Malik, Reeves, Bazemore, and then THT, half, whatever position he's considered. Ellington will be able to provide some spot minutes. The very few times the Lakers had enough healthy bodies, Rondo didn't play. And especially when LeBron's there, I with LeBron and THT going to be back, I think Rondo's minutes are quickly going to go back down to zero. So we'll see. I'd like to see LeBron with Wayne Ellington to see if he's able to kind of create some of those open looks. Wayne Ellington spoke in the offseason about kind of being excited to. He referenced he always watched Kyle Korver play with LeBron in Cleveland, and just kind of being envious of the open looks that he got. So as kind of uncertain as I am about Wayne Ellington, I'd like to see him next to LeBron, see what he's able to do there. But, I mean, as you mentioned, it's a numbers game, kind of in the opposite direction as the centers and forwards right now, and that there's too many guards. It creates kind of a good problem where ideally, I mean, we haven't mentioned Kendrick Nunn, who's going to be in that rotation.
That's the crazy thing is like I said, you could make a case for like a 6-7 guard rotation right now. And with the personnel the Lakers have, you might have to. It's just a matter of how do you make it work? I think Talen plays a really big part in that. I think Kent Bazemore is probably more suited to guard threes than he is twos at this stage of his career. I'm so fascinated by this. Like,
it'll be interesting to see if THT's return helps Bazemore on the defensive end, because maybe THT's able to take some of those guards and those quicker players that Bazemore really struggled with. We saw it with Ja Morant and things like that. Maybe Bazemore is able to take the wing option and THT's able to take the guard, and maybe that helps him out. But yeah, the point I was going to make before I realized we hadn't mentioned Kendrick Nunn, it does create a good problem in that if there's a situation where there is now with Kent Bazemore where he needs time off, you're able to just kind of give it to him. If there's a situation where somebody's struggling, you don't have to just ride it out with them. You can go to someone else because there's guys available, and it creates competition, which once a knock on wood, if everybody gets healthy, there's going to be an insane amount of competition in that backcourt, which should only improve things. Right now it helps in that we've been able to keep enough guards, even with seemingly all of them injured early in the year, we've been able to keep enough guards on the floor to have a perfectly fine rotation of them. But it's going to be really interesting because, THT's back. Reeves, I think, will probably be next week before he's back. Kendrick Nunn is this week or next week, I'd imagine. But we're getting close to the point where there's about to be all that competition for guard spots and guard minutes, and a lot of guys competing for it. So it's exciting. It's what we thought was going to happen a month ago when the regular season started. We're ultimately going to have to wait like a month and a half into the season, but it's going to be interesting to see how they balance it. Who's going to be the odd man out? As you said earlier, guys like Malik, guys like Austin Reeves have kind of established themselves in certain types of roles, and they took advantage, especially Austin Reeves took advantage of the opportunity. I mean, in the opposite vein, I think Rondo's kind of proven he's old and washed. Bazemore hasn't really taken advantage of the opportunity. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle all these guard minutes. Because, there's a lot of guys that you would think would require minutes, and somebody's going to have to be the odd man out.
You know what I was thinking about while you were saying that is, if Russell Westbrook wasn't making nearly $50 million a year, I wonder where he would be in this conversation.
If he was just making an average, like, yeah, $5-10 million.
Like, if he was in the Wayne Ellington, Kent Bazemore, Kendrick Nunn salary figure.
I don't know. That'd be interesting. They still just wouldn't have a pure ball handler. Like, he's still their best ball handler.
Yeah.
As much as he throws the ball away with turnovers, and I think he leads the league in turnovers. He had seven more on Sunday.
There was a play today. I don't know if he thought Melo was going to, like, grab the ball from the baseline and then, like, 360 it in. But it was so funny just to think about how much has been made about Westbrook's turnovers, and rightfully so. But for him to just have a play where it genuinely looked like, knowing that Carmelo Anthony cannot jump, it looked like he just threw the ball into the crowd. Like, he passed it to a fan is what it looked like. I thought that was hilarious.
I don't know how much more leeway he's going to get, because he keeps saying, like, oh, it's about kind of establishing chemistry and learning new teammates. Like, bud, we're a month into the season and you're making the same turnovers that you were making in game one. You're throwing apparently lob passes to Carmelo Anthony in 2021.
When's the last time you watched Melo play? That's not even a chemistry thing. That's, do you watch basketball?
When's the last, there may be a way to look this up that I'm not going to. When's the last time you think Melo caught an alley-oop?
Oh God. It had to have been an all-star game, because I can't imagine him doing it in, like, the regular season.
I didn't even think of that. And that would make it much harder to look up. But yeah, that, like, he just makes these, I've said it before, he's a remarkably smart player who makes just some of the wildest, most insane, like, what are you doing plays, on a semi-regular basis. Apparently Melo has an alley-oop this season. There's no way it could have been for a dunk. I'm trying to pull it up. It was against the it doesn't say, but apparently he has one this season. But yeah, just things like, don't throw Melo lobs. Like, I don't know why you're doing that. Stuff like that.
And if you do, have him be close to the rim. I hope you get an opportunity to look at the one I'm talking about. It was one so far away from the basket that I think only, like, Zach LaVine would have caught it, I think. But beyond that, there are very few players that would have. We got a fun little one tonight, by the time you're listening to this. It's the Chicago Bulls, the return of the Caruso. Alex Caruso, who started at power forward for the Chicago Bulls on Sunday night. I think last time I checked, he led the team in plus minus, which is hilarious. I also saw that Luke Kennard led the Clippers in plus minus on Sunday night. So, you know, great night for white guys in the NBA. Caruso, 2 of 11 from the field, but a game high plus 16 in the box score in the Bulls' 190 win over the Clippers. I miss him so much, and I'm excited to get to watch him play tomorrow. Part of me hopes that he just has the game of his life. And I'm going to say another part of me, but there is no other part of me. I want him to succeed in ways that very few former Lakers I want to succeed that much. Like, I really enjoyed his time with the Lakers. Him and Kyle Kuzma. Kuzma's run that he's on with the Wizards right now just feels so damn vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Irwin, come on the podcast and face me, you coward.
So first, I found the alley-oop for Melo. He actually had an alley-oop dunk from a Russell Westbrook pass this season against the Thunder. That's why I didn't remember it, because wow. I blanked out both those games.
I was in Boston.
Yeah, I'm sorry to whoever was probably yelling at us for being idiots about that. I do not remember anything about those two games. I refuse to keep that information. I was joking with Sabrina Merchant, I Love Basketball host, about maybe 2 weeks ago that it was still hard for me to watch the Bulls because I miss Caruso so much. It was hard to see him in a Bulls jersey. Then I got mad at the Bulls because they don't sell a Bulls jersey. Like, if I have to watch him in it, at least let me buy a Caruso Bulls jersey. What's also infuriating, God, I'm getting mad just thinking, Lonzo and Caruso are exactly what I thought they'd be together.
Yeah.
They're so much fun to watch.
Incredible. They're
absolutely a nightmare defensively. And it's like, we could have had that. Obviously, we had Anthony Davis, but still, like, it's so much fun to watch them, but also just annoying as hell to watch Caruso and know that the Lakers should have had that. Like, I'm sure somebody last week talked about the story with him saying the Lakers basically offered him less than 2 years, $15 million to come back. He got over $9 million over three or four years with the Bulls. Still
really good.
Like, yeah, crazy undervalued. But still, like, a huge payday for him. And just, I don't know who to be mad at. Clearly, the front office didn't value him that much. And also, there was a desire not to pay the luxury tax. So I'm mad at a lot of people. And I, too, hope Caruso drops 40 and starts shushing Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss at about midway through the fourth quarter.
Knowing what you know about the Glazers, the famed sports owners, if it meant keeping Caruso on the Lakers, would you accept a Glazer ownership of the Lakers?
I love Caruso that much. Yes. I bought two shirts, like commemorating the Lakers title. One of them was just kind of the generic, like, oh, Lakers are 2020 NBA champions. And the other one is Alex Caruso soaring through the air, dunking the ball, saying 2020 NBA champion. Like, I love him so much. I thought it was an absolute slam dunk he was coming back. It broke my heart as more and more kind of reports came out that he probably wasn't going to return. In some ways, I'm glad that it was, like, slowly leaking out, because, like, if it would have just hit that he was going to the Bulls and not coming to the Lakers, I would have been inconsolable. So there are very few things I wouldn't have done to have Alex Caruso on the Lakers. He's so much fun. I don't know that he's going to start at power forward, especially if LeBron is back, but we'll see if LeBron instinctively throws him the ball in the offensive end as he cuts across the lane or something on Monday.
You know what I'm hoping happens is, while we're on the topic of the Glazers, if the Lakers just brought Alex Caruso back midseason in an unexpected move, and for soccer fans, I am comparing Alex Caruso to Cristiano Ronaldo, which is an insult to Alex Caruso.
Whoa. Stop the comparison.
But that's why I said it's an insult to Alex Caruso. But, you know, like, I guess a more apt comparison would be D Wade leaving Miami and then coming back midseason. It's a far fetch, but I would do it. I miss him, and I hope it's a fun game. I hope the Lakers win, because I think they need it. I hope LeBron plays, because that would be awesome. And after that, good Lord. Yeah.
Hell of Bulls, a road trip coming up.
Bulls at home, Bucks on the road, Celtics on the road. Not too worried about that. and then Pistons on Sunday. So I just saw Bucks, Bulls. I'm less worried about this road trip. But on the opposite side, if the Lakers lose to the Celtics and Pistons, specifically the Pistons on Sunday, I pray for our mentions on Sunday when we have to podcast again.
This is going to be an interesting test of the Lakers because it's our first real road trip. It's going to have a couple big games on it. It's going to last all the way to Thanksgiving. We're going to find out a lot about this team and kind of where they're at early in the season in the next week and a half, 2 weeks.
We will talk to you about those games next week, but also the corresponding weeks. But until then, hope you enjoy your holidays. Thanksgiving is on Thursday. If you're going to do holiday shopping, make sure to stay safe. Get those Black Friday deals. While you were actually talking about Alex Caruso, I went on NBAStore.com. You can get an unsigned, that's the catch, an unsigned picture of Alex Caruso for $10 on the NBA store.
It's a steal. I'm going right now.
We'll catch you guys next week.